Hey, folks, before we start this week's episode, we want to tell you about this special event happening Friday, March 27th at the Hard Rock Cafe here in Seattle as part of the festivities surrounding the Emerald City Comic-Con, Crackle Fest 5, featuring openers Cy Fried and Meg Ran and Seattle area burlesque, not to mention the band Kirby Crackle. Yeah, it's going to be great, man. Did I say burlesque? Yes, I did. It's going to be there, and it was fantastic last year. It's going to be even better this year. And it's hosted by me, Aaron of the Air Raid Podcast. So get your tickets now. They're $10 in advance. You can go to KirbyCracklemusic.com, click on the show poster, and it'll take you directly there, or visit our show blog for this here episode and click the link and get your tickets now. Let's do this, man. Let's do it. Let's have a great time together. Okay, let's start the show. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 239 in what has now officially become a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks. We've got a veritable payload of awesome for your brains this week. Comedian, actor, claymation enthusiast Judah Friedlander will be joining us here shortly. I had the pleasure of going down to Parlor Seattle Comedy Club here in the fine city of Seattle, Washington, and talking with Judah in the green room of said club, and we had a great chat, man. An absolutely fantastic chat. Now, one thing I will say is that this episode was supposed to go up last weekend, in prep for Judah's show that he was doing that night. And it just didn't work out. I was told that I could not put it up because of the Mike McCready episode that was dropping on Monday, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, here we are. Here we are, right? And it's, you know what? This is probably for the best anyway. For the best anyway, to get it the most listens and everything like that. Not get buried in what was happening with the Mike McCready episode, which a lot of you really, really enjoyed. And thank you so much for your patronage. And I hope that you're back this week and listening again if you are new to the show. So welcome back. Welcome back, listeners. Also, got a bunch of emails saying that they loved the inspirational quote by my 3.5-year-old daughter. So we're going to continue doing that as well at the end of the show. And one more thing that we should mention. We got a bunch of emails this week saying, hey, what's wrong with your levels? What's wrong with the volume of the show? It's so quiet. So we're trying something out. We're boosting the levels in this episode. So hopefully I didn't just blow your ears out, regular listener. I'm going to try to boost these levels. I'm not a professional here, folks, and I'm just doing my best, man. So get off my back. No, just joking. Just joking. We love hearing the constructive criticism and things of that nature and, what we can do to better this show for your listening experience, because that's what it's all about, man. And if you'd like to send us an email, like to keep in touch, you can get at me at Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at air-raid.net. So anything that's, suiting your fancy, if you've got a band that you think we should listen to, we'll do that as well, right? Yeah. Speaking of bands, our buddies at do206.com are partnering with Jameson Whiskey, one of my personal favorites, to bring these monthly showcases. This next one coming up is Wednesday, March 25th at 8 p.m. It's actually the first one that they've been doing, or that they're going to do, at the Tractor Tavern, Wednesday, March 25th. It's $3. $3 with RSVP. It's 21+. And check out these bands, man. Theoretics, Hebu, Maya Masner, and Transmissionary. from brought to you by the good people of Jameson and Do206.com. Go to Do206.com, sign up on this website. It doesn't cost anything, but you can get all of what's happening in the city of Seattle. Now, if you want to go to DoStuffMedia.com, you can sign up and for the city that you live in and check that out as well, because they're all around the United States. So great calendar website, shows you everything that's going on in your town. Now, some of the towns aren't going to be on there, of course, but it's worth checking out. DoStuffMedia.com and Do206.com here in Seattle. Let's see. I've got something to confess. I've got something to confess to you guys, all of you listening. I'm not proud of it, and it's going to take some it's going to take some breathing exercises to get this out. But the other day on Friday night, my wife, my children, and I decided that we were going to go to the Olive Garden for dinner. And so we did. And we drove up to the Olive Garden in Linwood, Washington. And we used to, you know, we're having some money issues right now, like most people are on this planet. So we had a bunch of bills stack up all at the same time, which everybody is familiar with, right? And we said, well, we don't really have the money to go to the grocery store until next week. And we don't feel like cooking any of the things that we have already. So why don't we just use these two gift cards that we got 5 years ago from Great Uncle Lawrence for Christmas? It was about time, right? And so we had $100 to spend at the Olive Garden. And we took our kids up there and ate at the Olive Garden. And man, what a experience that was. Let me tell you. First mistake, we indulged ourselves and went there. Second mistake, we tried to use up all of the gift cards. So $100 at Olive Garden. And the portion size, you guys, at this place is just ridiculous. I mean, they give you the it's endless breadsticks, it's endless salad. And of course, we got appetizers to go with it because we're idiots. And just by the end of this whole meal, it was danger zone. It was danger zone. I was in so much pain. I couldn't figure out that, and maybe this isn't the thing that's at all of the Olive Gardens, but when we sat down at the table, it's very big chairs, and they're on rollers. They're on actual wheels. The chairs are on wheels, folks. And I was like, what the fuck is the point of this? This is like some tacky shit, man. And then I finally, you know, realized after I was sitting there comatose, after our full meal and dessert, by the way, and I had to basically wheel myself away from the table. And I was like, oh, that's what it is, right? Because you can't fucking move after all the carb loading that you do at Olive Garden. And man, I'll tell you what, I hope I'm not offending anybody by saying this, but man, that was some awful, awful food. It was terrible. It was awful. I have only been to the Olive Garden once before, and that was when it was at the, like, when the one opened up in Silverdale, Washington. It was big deal, man. Big deal when Olive Garden opened up and came into Silverdale. My parents took us, and we never went back again. And I remember loving it, obviously my parents were a little bit smarter than I was at that age, and they decided, yeah, we're never coming back here, which was a great plan. And that's exactly the plan that we have now going forward with our children. Just the portion size alone that they gave my child. We ordered off the kids menu. We ordered an ice cream sundae, which was like $1.50, right? $1.50 for an ice cream sundae. For a kid, you think you're going to get this little tiny cup, you know, it's going to have some, you know, some good stuff on it and a cherry on top and whatever. But they brought out this giant sundae for a fucking 3.5-year-old, man. What kind of place does that? Holy crap. I had to like separate off and take a whole bunch off of her sundae and tell her this is the amount that you get to have because we're not giving you all of that. And by the time we got back into the car, even my kid, even my 3-year-old, was like, wow, I don't feel good. I ate too much ice cream. There you go, man. There you go. We're never going back. And I'll tell you this. I'll tell you this. And this is totally true. I have not been hungry since Friday. I have literally not been hungry since Friday. I think I've had two meals since Friday. And that was only because my energy was low. And I was like, man, I really need to eat something. That is not good, man. That's not good. My body shouldn't be doing that. I should be like, I should be hungry three times a day, right? Isn't that how that's supposed to work? I don't know. All right. Well, let's get into this, shall we? We've got a great episode planned for you. We've also got some great music, some new music by this band called The Dead Painters out of Brooklyn, New York, featuring a buddy of mine that I used to play music with in college and out of college, TC. Man, and this stuff is fantastic. I hope you guys really enjoy it. If you'd like to find out more about The Dead Painters, let's see, you can go to facebook.com/deadpainters. There you go, right? Or what's their, do they have a website? They got a website, right? They got a Bandcamp page too, where you can listen to some older stuff as well. This is, off of their new album, which is yet to be entitled. But go check them out, like them on Facebook, do that whole thing. If you'd like to find out more about Judah, Friedlander, let's see, he's going to be April 15th through the 18th. He'll be in Washington, D.C. at the D.C. Improv. And then April 23rd through the 25th, he'll be in Austin, Texas at the Moon Tower Comedy and Oddity Fest. So go and check that out as well. JudahFriedlander.com for more details and ticket info. Let's see, just to let you know, in this episode, we talk about Judah's role in the upcoming prequel to American Wet Hot American Summer. Yeah, man. He was in that movie. He played the husband of one of the camp counselors, played by Shannon. Shannon from the SNL. I can't remember her name. Shannon something. Anyway, this is a great chat. Yeah, man. Judah, world champ, man. Yeah. All right, this is Dead Painters. This song is called Make Light, Rich Kid, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears. Special guest this week, Judah Friedlander. All right, be back in a moment. Sound like you don't have a cold.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I wanted to ask you. I was in my minimal amount of research that I do for these things. I read that you were once a competitive ping pong player.
I still play.
Do you really?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I play more for fun than really to compete.
Yeah.
The national team trials are going on right now.
That's what you have pulled up on your phone.
Yeah, and that's what I have. I'm watching some of my friends compete to make the national
team. No shit, that's great, man.
Yeah, it's going on today, tomorrow, and Sunday in Texas.
When did you get into ping pong?
Well, I always played as a little kid, you know, and then somewhere around like junior high age, like eighth grade, somewhere around there, one of our friends all of a sudden had all these new ping pong moves, and we're like, out of the blue, and we're like, where's this coming from? And then we found out he was learning from this guy, Mr. Chen, a Chinese guy down the street. And then we found out from him that there's actually real official ping pong tournaments and stuff like that.
Right.
So that it's like, it's not just a game, it's like a real sport.
Yeah.
And then my brother, he went to like a ping pong camp for a week. And so there he learned like the basic fundamentals. So he taught me some stuff. Soccer was always my main game. And ping pong tournaments always happen at the same time soccer games did. So
yeah.
I stayed with soccer. But I did play, when I was around 13, I did play one official ping pong tournament. So
how'd you do?
No, did not well at all. Yeah. But I
out
knew,
in the first round?
Oh, yeah. Well, also, the ping pong tournaments are by, the divisions in this country are by ability. So they'll have about 7 categories, from beginner level to most advanced.
Okay.
And, So I always knew what real, since then I knew what real ping pong was. And then, about 6 years ago, I started playing again.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It was always a game I could never get the hang of.
Oh, okay.
It was too quick. It was too, yeah.
It's the fastest game in the world.
It's so quick. Like, yeah. And the ball's so small. Like, I can't, you know, and the paddle's small and everything. Like, I could never get my brain wrapped around it. I could never go fast enough.
I didn't realize this was going to be a difficult subject for you to talk about.
It is.
I'm sorry we segued into this right off the top. I want you to stay strong through the rest of this interview.
Shit is getting real.
And not let this ping pong inability of yours disrupt the entire interview.
Well, I am sitting here with the world champ. It's true. I mean, it's hard to come to grips with. You know? Yeah.
It's all right. You're gonna be okay.
So were sports always something that was like, you know, your family was always into sports? And
sure, yeah.
Yeah?
You know, sports, art, definitely, yeah.
Really? Sports and art?
Yeah, I always did art, a lot of art as a kid, yeah. Drawing, painting, clay stuff, always, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you ever try to make like a claymation movie?
I did, when I was in, it was 8th or 9th grade, I started making my own animated movies on Super 8 movie film, and it was clay animation, then I started doing drawing animation. And,
so you're doing the cells and everything.
Yeah, I was actually, the cells are very expensive, but I used the paper that's made, it's the same size as cell stuff. Before you draw stuff on cells, you often draw it on paper.
Right,
so it's like paper, the same.
It's almost like a tracing paper, right?
No, it's regular paper.
Oh, okay.
But it's the same, same exact format as the cells, but except it's paper. So I did an animated film all on that stuff. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was
wow.
Cool.
Do you still have it?
Yeah. Yeah, I had it somewhere. Yeah.
You ever watched it? Have you watched it?
It's actually pretty cool. I need to put it on my website. I need to do that because...
I think you should, man.
It's somewhere, yeah.
I would love to see that.
And then after that, somewhere in high school, I got into live-action movies, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then I started stand-up when I was 19, so I've been doing that ever since. That's my main thing still.
Yeah.
And, but I have a new book coming out this year. And it's, you know, it's going to be a book of drawings.
Oh, really?
I started drawing a lot again.
Yeah.
So it's mostly funny, you know, cartoons and drawings.
Uh-huh.
So.
And has that always been something that you've been into as well since a little kid? Like comic books and things like that?
Not so much comic books. I mean, I love comic books, but more like one panel funny cartoons.
Like Far Side kind of stuff.
Yeah, like that stuff and other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like twisted stuff. So I have a book coming out of that kind of stuff. And
that's
some
great.
Are political, but most are just like crazy, absurd, and funny.
Sure.
But some
are
kind of a little more kind of brutal or serious.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. I like that. I came across some old Gary Larson stuff, I don't know, a couple months ago or something. I had this old book, you know, book
cool.
of Gary Larson.
Yeah, they're great.
And I just started flipping through it, and I was like, holy shit, man.
Yeah.
This is still, like, today, this is
Seattle,
still amazing. Yes, he is, and I've tried to get him on the show, and he does not do interviews.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely refuses. Like, very, very, very socially anxious person, apparently.
Well, he also probably, you know, he did so much work, he probably didn't actually need to do them. So.
No, no, of course not. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I forgot he's from here. Yeah.
Yeah, he's still, I believe he still lives, I think maybe like around Tacoma or something like that. South of Seattle.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, just coming across that stuff and like realizing how his work totally spans the test of time, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It
holds
up. It's just amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's solid. Yeah. Yeah.
How can you not laugh at a bunch of dinosaurs smoking cigarettes?
Yeah, yeah. That's how they became extinct. That was his, that was his cartoon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Everybody had that mug.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I was always into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I have a book of that coming out later this year. I'm working on that now. And then, you know, stand up every night. I'll have an album coming out later this year.
Uh-huh.
And then a couple of acting projects. I did a part, three episodes of this series, new series called Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be on Netflix, right?
Yeah, July 17th. It's actually a prequel to the original movie, which came out about 14 years ago. I was in that one.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So this one, I'm reprising the role. So.
There are a lot of people very excited for this.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to be great. I just filmed it. So I filmed some in January or February, and it was so much fun to do.
And it's all the same cast, right?
All the same cast. Plus a ton of new people.
Oh, my God.
You got Kristen Wiig in it. You got John Hamm. It's a lot of people.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That must have been so much fun.
Yeah. I played a guy named Ronald von Kleinenstein, and I was the ex-husband of Molly Shannon's character.
Right,
Gail. And she's, like, besides being hilarious, you know, like, the nicest person. So it was cool to see her again and work with her again.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun.
Where did you guys film that?
The original we filmed, I believe it was upstate Pennsylvania by the New York border of New York and Pennsylvania, way up in the boonies, at a real camp.
Yeah.
We filmed that right before the actual camp started.
Oh,
and,
really?
Like, yeah, because I think camp started in July, and we filmed it in, like, I think May and June, I think, or just June. But this one was filmed in L.A., And it looks the same.
Right, you guys recreated.
We're out in the wilderness, and then whatever they did, I don't know how they did it, but it looks the same.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. Did you ever think that movie was going to become such a cult hit?
I knew it had a good chance of being a cult hit.
Really?
I did know that, but I never thought we'd be making a prequel 15 years later.
That's so fucking crazy.
Because, you know, most of the people in the first one are playing, like, I played an adult in the first one.
Right,
but most of the people were people in their late 20s or early 30s, and they're playing someone who's 16.
Right.
So now they're in their late 30s or 40s, and they're playing someone who's 16 again. Because the new one takes place a couple months before the first one.
Sure,
So it's even more
part
ridiculous.
That's part of the great thing about that movie.
I think it's a brilliant idea
to
not make a sequel, but to make a prequel.
That's great,
It's so silly.
Oh, that's so good.
So it was so much fun to do, and those guys, you know, David Wayne, Michael Showalter, the writers and directors, they're so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how many episodes is that going to be?
That's 8 episodes, and I did 3. Yeah.
Did 3 episodes.
Yeah. It was I had a blast. It was fun.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait, man. I can't wait to see that. So, so you said a little bit earlier that you started stand up at 19. What was the impetus to get
I started writing jokes
business?
At 16.
Okay.
So I was always
just for yourself?
Yeah, for me to do stand-up.
Oh, you know,
at 16 is when I got the urge. So I was always doing art as a kid.
Okay.
And then I got into animation. And then I got into, like, filmmaking with, like, real people and, like, screenwriting. And I was really into special effects, too, when I was a kid.
Yeah, but me too. Fangoria, dude, one of my favorite magazines.
Definitely. And then I started really getting... And then even when I did a couple of political cartoons when I was in, like, sixth grade, you know.
Really?
So I was into, like, social commentary humor back then, even.
Sure.
And then around 16 is when I realized that being a stand-up comedian was something you could actually do.
By watching
But there was a show that came on TV.
Uh-huh.
This is in the 80s. And yeah. I didn't have cable growing up. And this is pre-Comedy Central.
Right.
So before, the only comedians you would see, you might see Steve Martin, you might see Bob Hope, Rodney Dangerfield. And it was all great, but it never occurred to you that you could actually do that.
Right.
And then there was this one little show syndicated, came on late at night, and it featured comics that you hadn't heard of. And they'd say about how they're going to be performing at this comedy club. And that's the first time I ever heard that there were comedy clubs, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, you know. So I was like, I'm like, oh, you can do this. I'm like, I want to do that, you know. I was like so thrilled by it. So I started writing jokes at 16. And then, you know, I was very introverted as a kid. So then around 19, I, you know, went to my first open mic and did a set.
How'd that go?
It actually went pretty well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Were you nervous at all getting in front?
Super
getting
nervous.
Up in
yeah, I was very introverted. Super nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I, it just felt, on stage, it felt warm, and it felt right, and it felt like home. So it just felt right. Yeah. But
that's
beforehand,
great.
I was super nervous.
Yeah.
Because I had to get there about 5 hours early to sign up, and then it was just 5 hours of
get
waiting around.
Get on the list.
Yeah, 5 hours waiting around, just getting more and more nervous. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one thing. See, I've dabbled, right?
Okay.
I've never been. I would not consider myself a stand-up comedian in any realm.
Well, you have done it, so that does count.
Well, yeah, but it's for like an emceeing thing or something like that, right? But it's like, but it's the most nerve-wracking thing that I've ever experienced, and I can't understand why people would seek it out.
Today, it's the most relaxing thing I do.
Really?
Yeah.
Getting up on stage.
I get nervous throughout the rest of the day, but on stage I'm relaxed.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. That's like the one area where I'm like everything's cool.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah.
That's absolutely amazing to me.
Yeah.
It's so foreign.
Yeah.
To my way of thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, do you get nervous?
I'm trying to get better off stage as far as not being nervous, but I'm often nervous off stage. Yeah.
You don't seem nervous now.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I don't know.
And there's the lackadaisical Judah Friedlander that everybody knows, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
Do you ever get nervous when you're like doing your acting and starring in things like that?
Not really.
No?
Not really. Yeah.
That's become
maybe beforehand, but not when you're doing it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah.
When you're doing it, you're just so in the moment. You're not thinking about anything else. You're just doing it, you know?
Mm-hmm. But like even when you're sitting down there and
it's like when you're brushing your teeth, you're not nervous about it.
Right.
You're
right.
Just brushing your teeth.
Yeah. It's a normal everyday thing, right?
Yeah. You know. When you're when you're in the bathroom, you know, taking a dump, you're not worrying about it. You're just all right, here I go.
Well, sometimes you are.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't be generally. Hopefully you're not.
If you're healthy,
hopefully
you should not be worrying about
it. Yeah, hopefully you're just like, all right, I gotta
BMs.
Do
BMs.
You're just like, okay, I gotta do this again.
Right.
And you do it. You know, that's kind of the way it is. You're not really thinking about anything else.
But I think there is a for people.
I didn't mean to equate stand-up comedy with shitting, but I guess that's what I just did. But I guess you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Stand-up comedy, it's just like taking a shit.
It's
end
relaxing.
Of class.
Yeah, right.
There's a little more to it than that.
Well, of course. Yeah. But, I mean, there's this mystical sense for people like myself who are not in the business that you're in, you know, as the onlooker.
Yeah.
It seems very out there.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you must have felt that as a kid, you know, watching your favorite stand-up comedians
It just seemed like really exciting, you know, when I would see
right.
it. Yeah, you know, just really cool. Yeah.
And when you got into it, was it less exciting?
Maybe over the years it's become that way, but you have to you have to find that again, you know, find that excitement and realize it. Yeah, because everything can become just like a grind or
it becomes a job.
It is a job too. It can stress you out or whatever, you know. So you gotta remember that.
Yeah.
And remember why you got into it, and, you know. And one of the keys to counteracting that is to always be working on new things.
Sure.
You know, always coming up with new jokes and new angles. Yeah.
Sure.
Because otherwise, it does become like work.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, let's do this. Let's go to our second musical break, and we'll be right back with special guest this week,
Judah Friedlander.
Cool.
Here on the Everyday Podcast. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Where you entered my circle of brain space, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
Dave Matthews' music video.
Oh, yeah.
You were the hug guy.
Yeah, that was in 2001.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Now, I know you had done acting and stuff like that before.
Yeah, I'd done a few movies, right. And I'd already been doing stand-up about 10 years or more. Yeah, 12 years, something like that. Yeah, I started stand-up in 89, and then, so, yeah, that came about. My manager was actually a big Dave Matthews fan.
Oh, really?
And the person who was casting that had just cast me in Zoolander in a small part.
Oh.
And she was also one of the casting directors on Meet the Parents, where I had a little part.
Okay.
So, I had done those, and initially on that video, you know, the video is called, the song is Every Day.
Every Day.
And it's
right.
Just me walking around hugging people.
Yeah.
And that song, by the way, predates the whole free hug movement thing.
Sure.
There's a guy out there, I forget his name, and I forget what country he's from, but he's been on Oprah, and he claims to have created the whole concept of just a stranger giving people hugs.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you didn't. And this video came out before that, and this video was massive.
It was
one of the biggest music videos ever done at the time, you know, and I think the free hug thing might even predate the video that I did, and I didn't come up with the concept for it. This guy Chuck, I'm blanking on his last name, an ad agency guy who writes commercials, he came up with the concept. So that free hug guy is like basically full of shit when he said when he's on Oprah and saying he created this whole thing. It's like, all right, dude, you didn't create the concept. You know, it's been around.
So
that's a little annoying, but. Anyways.
But why
would you brag about creating that concept anyways? It's like, isn't the concept just about generosity, not about putting everything on yourself and how great you are? You know, so
it is indeed.
Yeah, it's a big conflict that guy
that's
has.
That's a really good point.
Anyways.
Yeah. I can tell you got some pent up it's
something I've never really talked about, and it just entered my head again. And, yeah. And I'm like, why? What? Yeah, so anyways. The point is just to give love, and you don't have to brag about it. Just put the love out there.
That's right. That's right, man.
But that video initially, apparently, they were looking at models to play that lead role, like a multiracial male model, sort of a beautiful man of all races and backgrounds.
Yeah.
And then apparently it was coming off kind of flat, and they started looking for comedians or comedic actors. And mm-hmm. I had an audition, and it was a weird audition, and I got it.
Yeah.
So I didn't know the band. I didn't. The guys who made it did a really good job, and the video actually came out quite well.
Yeah.
The cinematographer is this guy named Lance Accord, who's very good. You know, he's done a lot of big movies like Lost in Translation, Being John Malkovich.
Really?
Yeah, so they had, it was a really, really, really well put together music video. Yeah.
Well, I remember it. I was never a big fan of the music.
Yeah.
But I do remember that video.
And the video also came out like 2 months after, or a month or two after 9/11. So we filmed it in October of 2001.
Yeah.
And initially, apparently the band, I remember hearing them say this, wasn't going to release that song next.
Yeah.
But then after 9/11, they decided to, and I think they came up with this concept.
That was a good fucking move.
Yeah. So it was very weird. Yeah, so people were really, I remember at the time, people being really touched by it.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I had done an acting thing or a project, and people were actually like moved by something. And
yeah.
I remember it felt weird. Like people would come up to me, someone was like, teary, like, that was so great. And I was like, well, that's a weird feeling. I'm used to just making people laugh, and I'm not used to like people reacting that way.
Right.
So, but
when you kind of became like the free hug guy after.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
Right?
And every once in a while, I still people ask me for a hug.
Really?
Not often, but every once in a while. But for years there, I was giving out hugs constantly. Yeah.
Was that a little bit weird? That must have been weird.
Yeah, it was weird. I remember at the time, I think my OCDs go up and down, but at the time they were like really bad, where I didn't really like touching anybody. So people had to come up and touch me all the time.
Well, there's,
so,
I mean,
so
there's
that would make me nervous.
There's a lot of things that can happen there. There's a lot of, you know, very strange smells that come along with
when we did the video, it was that way. I had to hug everybody.
Oh, really?
No matter who was coming up, I had to try to hug them.
Oh, so it was just like, they put you on the street.
Yeah, 80%. It was 3.5 days on the street.
Yeah.
And 80% of it's real. And
no
then 20%
shit.
Is staged.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's why it works so well, I guess, right?
So, yeah, they had cameras like a block or two away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, was that your first – was that – do you think that kind of jettisoned your career in a certain sense?
I don't know. I mean, the first thing that really got me a lot of – where people started noticing me was I had a little part in Meet the Parents.
Okay.
And the first one. And
that was 2000, right, or 99?
About – it was – I can't remember. I'd have to look it up. It was 99 or 2000 that it came out.
Sure.
And that got me a lot of notice. And then, but that video was ridiculous because it was, you know, the band's, I'm in the video more than the band.
Right.
And it was a good video and they played it, you know, endlessly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got a lot of recognition from that.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
And was that your first, I think you may have just stated this, but that was kind of your first actual serious part. It wasn't a real comedic part. To play.
Yes, I guess so. Because right after I did that, I did a movie that was a serious movie. A big movie called American Splendor.
Yeah,
that was filmed. I filmed that about like almost right after that. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? And so was that a tough transition for you?
That movie was tough, but it was a good tough.
Yeah.
It was very difficult, but it was. It was just very challenging for everyone, that movie. It was, you know, it's a very different kind of movie and a difficult movie to make, but it came out great. You know, those filmmakers did a great job.
It was a fantastic movie.
Yeah, it won Sundance. It won Major Award at Cannes. It's a really interesting I mean, it's not a movie for everyone, but, you know, it's a very interesting movie.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
smart, interesting movie.
Yeah. Well, I found it fascinating just to, you know, learning a little bit more about the Harvey Pekar.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. It's a movie about a creative guy, and it's a creatively made movie. You know?
Yeah.
The movie's constantly going back from actors portraying the people to the real people, and
right.
it's and plus there's animation, and yeah, it's a pretty wild movie.
Yeah, yeah. Now, was it fun for you being somebody who liked you know, drawing and dabbling in animation?
Yeah, you know, I always like doing stuff that where things interact with different aspects of the arts, you know, in different mediums, you know.
Yeah,
and like when I was a kid, I was really into special effects, so. Every once in a while, I do a horror movie, and I just fucking love it. I love it so much, you know.
I can only imagine, man. You know, I mean,
being in a horror movie is just so much fun.
Yeah,
you're like, my character gets to get killed by this giant alien monster. Awesome.
What horror movies have you been in?
I did a really cool one. I've done several, but I did a really cool one called Feast.
Oh, you in Feast?
Yeah, I played Beer Guy. There were three of them, okay. But I was in the first one and the second one. It was actually the last Project Greenlight movie, and it's a really good, it's funny, it's legit funny, and legit scary.
Yeah.
And it's a really cool movie.
Oh, that's fantastic, yeah. man.
So that
I'm going to have to watch that again. I didn't remember you being in that.
Yeah, Henry Rollins is in it.
Yeah.
Balthazar Getty, Klug Uhlager. Yeah, it's a cool movie.
Were you one of the guys that got just covered I'm
the beer guy. I play beer guy. Yeah, I'm basically... One of those alien monsters vomits on me early in the movie, and I'm just sort of decomposing throughout the whole movie. Yeah. Yeah, it was so much fun. Yeah.
So is it even fun just sitting there getting that stuff just caked
on
your face?
Oh, yeah, it's exhausting, but it's so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was just soaking wet in blood and monster vomit the whole movie for, you know, 12 hours a day. Yeah, it was fun.
That's so great. I would have daydreams about
And then last year I had a little part in Sharknado 2.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, that was a trip. Yeah, I approached them. I heard they were filming. I'm like, guys, please. I'll do anything in this thing. Yeah, and that was great. I love movies like
that's
that.
That's great, man. Yeah. That's great. Well, Judah, what's coming up for you, man? What are you
doing? Well, a couple things.
Working on this book.
Album.
Yeah.
Book. Book will be out in October. Album, I'm not sure. Hopefully earlier. July 17th is Netflix, Red Hot American Summer prequel. And then in the fall, I'm doing a voice on a new animated show, which will be on Fox primetime. Seth MacFarlane's the exec on that. It's called Border Town.
Border Town.
So fingers crossed, that should be really good.
Yeah. What's that about?
It's about two families, a white American family and a Mexican American family, both living in a fictitious town.
Across the border from each
which
other.
Which is basically right on the border of... U.S. and Canada.
Gotcha.
And the guy's family, he's a border agent. The white guy, he's a border agent. And the Mexican guy owns his own lawn mowing business. And he makes like twice the amount of money that the U.S. border agent makes. And so the U.S. border agent guy, he's kind of like an Archie Bunker kind of character where he's just always pissed off and angry and confused. And everyone else is pretty much doing okay.
Yeah.
You know, and so I play his idiot son.
Awesome.
And, a lot of cool voices in it. Alex Borstein, Hank Azaria.
Oh, wonderful.
Missy Pyle. You know, a lot. So hopefully, you know, I never like to say it's going to be great because you don't know until you see it. But both that and the White Hot American Summer were a blast to do. So,
oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. Well, thank you so much for sitting down and chatting with me here for a little bit. I really appreciate it. It's an honor to meet you, sir.
Hey.
And best of luck.
Thank you.
On all the stuff that's coming up.
Thank you.
Yeah, totally.
Very good.
That's the sound of me and Judah shaking hands.
Yep, winners shaking hands.
That's right.
In America.
World champs. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
That was fun.
The caps are black. My lips are cracked. My thoughts, they hover around the past, and that's where you come in.
Wasn't that fantastic?
Oh my God, we got a little insight into the upcoming wet hot American summer. I mean, shit, man. Little insight into Judah Friedlander, world champion. One thing I didn't say at the beginning of the episode is that he was on 30 Rock as well, had a, you know, a part on 30 Rock for the whole thing. Very, very cool guy, man. Couldn't have been a nicer dude. We had a wonderful conversation, as you heard there. And the name I couldn't think of, Molly Shannon. Molly Shannon. Why couldn't I think of that? I was calling her Shannon. I got the last name right. Yeah. Boy, I hope you guys really enjoyed this episode. We got to thank you guys for everything. Thank you for buying the t-shirts. Thank you. By the way, the t-shirts are now sold out. We'll say that. We'll put that out there. Thank you for liking our Facebook page. Thank you for all the emails and the love, man. The love that's been coming in lately. I had to go to Facebook the other day and just like I had a point of reflection a couple weeks ago where I was just thinking about the life of this project and what it has entailed for my family, for my wife, the time that it has taken away from them and just, you know, doing all this. But it's afforded us a lot of really cool things to be able to do. Really great people to be able to meet, great music to be able to see and to hear, which is, you know, the whole reason we started this show. And I had to go to Facebook and publicly thank everybody that's been involved with helping me out and helping me learn how to do this exact thing, you know, from the booking to the recording to the just sitting and being comfortable talking with people, right? So if you're one of those people that I thanked on Facebook or you're one of the people that has helped us out and we forgot to or I forgot to put your name up on that list, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And all to all of you that are listening to the show, it has been such a wild ride so far. This is episode 239. We've been going for 5 years and it's just fantastic, man. It's so much fun and we're going to keep on doing it. And like I said at the beginning of the show, you know, email us and let us know if there's somehow that we could improve this for you, the listener. So we really do appreciate it. Thank you, guys, everybody. Thank you, everyone, like Tiny Tim, right? Yeah. You can subscribe to the Air Raid podcast on iTunes. And if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. We really do appreciate that. It just takes a second to give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, and Cairo Radio apps, or just visit www.air-raid.net to subscribe directly to our RSS feed and use your little podcatchers on your mobile devices. Keep in touch with us by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/theairraidpodcast. Our Twitter handle is airraidnet, or email me, like I said earlier, directly at aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, people. Pledge to tell somebody about this show. Tell your friends, tell your mother, your sister, your brother. We'll even take cousins. That's right. Behind their back, just subscribe them to the Air Raid podcast on iTunes. And you know, it'll be a nice treat for them to open up that their iTunes thing and it just starts playing. That'll be a nice treat, man. They will thank you in the end, won't they? That's right. All right. We're going to close this week's episode with the song Jacob Riis by the band The Dead Painters, which features a very close friend of mine, TC, in the band. And man, am I proud of this guy because this album is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. So remember to keep up with The Dead Painters. You can find them on Facebook. Just type Dead Painters into the search bar or find them at Bandcamp. Check out what's coming up for them. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, as said by a 3.5-year-old.
Try to be a rainbow in someone's cloud.
All right, thanks everybody. Thanks for listening. We love you guys. Have a great week. We'll be right back.
on that concrete floor. I drift the streets like Jake DeVries. I didn't know where to go. I think of you.